You know, going on in chapter 43, but now thus says the Eternal that created you, O Jacob, and he that formed you, O Israel, don't be afraid, I've redeemed you. I've called you by your name, you're mine. So here he does use the term redeemed in a sense of brought you back out of a captivity or delivered you from an enemy, and yet at times he uses the word redeemed of spiritual terminology. It has to be salvation. So unless you're called, unless you have God's Spirit, no wonder you couldn't make heads or tails out of the Bible, because God let it be written that way. So here he says, don't be afraid, I've redeemed you. I've called you by your name, you're mine. When you pass through the waters, I'll be with you. And through the rivers, they'll not overflow you. When you walk through the fire, you'll not be burned. Neither shall the flame kindle upon you. Of course, this is referring back to Deuteronomy 31, these terminologies of passing through the waters and through the rivers and being overflowed and walking through the fire. So again, Isaiah is always going back and forth to the law and showing you that God's warnings in the law have been fulfilled and will go on being fulfilled. So it's one thing you would be well to note how many times Isaiah keeps referring back to phrases that come out of Deuteronomy or out of Exodus or Leviticus. Over and over again he does that. For I am the Eternal, your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. Now, how does he mean that? Spiritual or just saving you from your enemy or from captivity? Well, it's dual, really, in this case, because look what he goes on to say. I gave Egypt for your ransom, Ethiopia and Seba for you. Since you were precious in my sight, you've been honorable, and I've loved you. Therefore, I'll give these men, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Seba, for you. I'll give these people, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Seba, for your life. Now, of course, what happened in that case in history, these countries were actually given to Persia as if they were ransom money for the release of Israel by Persia. You can read about that in history. All of these three countries in Isaiah's time are united together, and it's as if God gave them instead of Israel and redeemed Israel by allowing the Persians to take these countries instead. Now, the word ransom here, once again, refers to the holy days, because it's the Hebrew word kopher, K-O-P-H-E-R, the same word as atonement, back in Exodus and Leviticus and those areas. So here you find a symbol of God redeeming by giving as an atonement others, and yet he talked about being their Savior. So there's an obvious parallel here to the way Christ, as a Savior, gave himself as a atonement or a ransom to God for Israel. And yet, you know, you wouldn't get any Jew to admit that. You wouldn't get any Jews to recognize that and see that or believe that. And yet, by the very original word for atonement being used here, that's about the only thing you could come up with. Then he goes on and says, fear not, for I am with you. And in the King James Version, they don't show emphasis like in the Hebrew and the Greek show. And some Bibles show emphasis. The emphasized Bible by Rotherham, because by the position of words in the sentence in the structure in Greek and Hebrew, you can tell what was emphasized when statements were made. And in these cases, the emphasis is on I am the Eternal, your God. I am with you. I've loved you. And that's the emphasis here as you go through in the Hebrew. Fear not, for I am with you. I'll bring your seed from the east and gather you from the west. I'll say to the north, give up, and to the south, keep not back. Bring my sons from far and my daughters from the ends of the earth. there you see what the word isles literally means, the ends of the earth, the coastlines of the Gentiles. But can you imagine this referring to a group of people in captivity in Babylon? There's no way you can say this refers to the original captivity at all, because they couldn't have been east and west and north and south. But the great captivity of Israel at the end time, Israel is so scattered, you know. They're in the west, they're in Australia, they're in South Africa, they're in Canada, they're in England, they're in France and Sweden and Norway and Denmark. And so when all those nations of Israel go into a captivity to punish them because they've misrepresented Christianity, then God is going to have to say to the east and the west and the north and the south, give up to the north. Apparently, an especial strong term toward them because, you know, the beast is the north. So apparently they're not going to want to give up any people when Christ comes back. There's no such strong term about the east. He just says, I'll bring your seed from the east. And he says, I'll gather you from the west. But when he talks about the north and the south, that seems to be the tough men, the beast and the United Arab Republic. So God is going to have to say to the north, give up. He's going to have to say to the south, don't keep back. Bring my sons. And of course, they're far. And the daughters, and they're scattered all the way to the ends of the earth. Even everyone that's called by my name, so they're called by God's names. I have created him for my glory. I have formed him. Yea, I have made him. And it's kind of interesting here that once again Isaiah goes all the way back to the first chapter of the Bible, because he uses terms in Isaiah that you don't find used anywhere else since Genesis, since Deuteronomy. You might notice back in Genesis 1, these same three Hebrew words are used. As you scan down through Genesis 1, you might notice these three words. In the beginning, God created. Of course, that's the Hebrew word bara, that means calling into being without pre-existing material. So that's an original beginning. God created. Well, a little bit later it says, verse 14, God said, let there be lights in the firmament. Let them be for signs. Let them be for lights. Verse 16, God made two great lights. He'd already created them who knows how long ago. Maybe millions of years ago. Maybe just thousands of years ago. You know, when the earth became dark with the flood of waters on it, that didn't blot out the sun out beyond all that water. So when God moved the firmament and moved the sun and the moon and the stars back between the layers of water around the earth, it's referred to as made. So the word made doesn't mean an original creation. God made. A-S-A-H in the Hebrew. Now a little bit later, verse 21, God created great whales. They weren't made out of the dirt that he'd already created, and they weren't made out of the water that he'd already created. God made some creatures out of the water, and he made some creatures out of the dirt. But some beings were literally created from nothing that existed previously. That's what the Hebrew word is, bara. God created great whales. Now, a little later on over in the first chapter, notice verse 26. God said, let us make man. Another different word. You might notice back up in verse 24, let the earth bring forth the living creature. See, they were made out of the dirt of the ground. The earth brought forth the living creature. They're made out of something that already existed. So look what he refers it to. Let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind. And then he uses a summary term, cattle, creeping thing, beast of the earth, after his kind. If so, God made the beast of the earth. Just took dirt that already existed and made it. The earth brought it forth. It was made out of the earth. Asa, the Hebrew word there. Now now God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, let them have dominion. Verse 27, God created man. What did God create about man? He made man. He said, let's make man. That has to do with the form and shape. That has to do with what God did with the dirt. That's making man out of dirt, after our likeness. So God created man in his image. That can't have to do with something that existed before. That word can't be used of using dirt and molding and shaping and forming man. God created man. That has to mean man has a mind and man has character and man has things about him that aren't a matter of being made. They're a matter of being created. Sex, male and female. That's a part of it. He created male and female. So the difference between man and woman isn't just the physical thing of the dirt. That'd be made. It's the word created. Verse 7 of chapter 2. The eternal God formed man of the dust of the ground. And that's the third word. That's not the second word, Asa. That's not the word that we've read in chapter 1. This is the word Vayitzer. V-A-Y-Y-I-T-Z-E-R. That means mold. So the eternal God molded man. But you notice in chapter 1, the God referred to is always just G-O-D in small letters. Elohim. So everything in chapter 1 is the uniplural God doing it. Elohim did all that in chapter 1. And chapter 1 really shouldn't end until after verse 3, because it's all Elohim. But then all of a sudden in verse 4, which literally should be the first verse of chapter 2, because now God goes back and fills in the details. He gave you the outline summary, and now he goes back to fill in the details. And you know, God did that with the law. First, he gives you this outline, Ten Commandments. He spoke himself, wrote it on tablets. Then he was going to speak the rest and write it in a book. But you know, man couldn't stand to have God give him all of it, so man begged God to do it some other way. So God said, well, all right, God meant to give it to you all personally to keep the fear of God so you'd live by it. And they talked God out of it. So God went ahead and had Moses write the rest of it in a book. Sure enough, the world ever since has done away with the book and made you believe they're just the Ten Commandments with the covenant. And that isn't true at all. But anyway, in chapter 2, verse 4 begins the work of the eternal Elohim. It's like saying Smith's worked in chapter 1 and then John Smith went to work in chapter 2. Because it's telling you which one of the Elohims. Which Elohim? Well, the eternal Elohim made the earth. That has to do with not the creating, but the mating. Now he comes down and says the eternal Elohim molded or formed man and breathed into his nostrils. So when you read the account there, you're actually reading about three different terms used for creation, and the next place you read about those again and again is in the book of Isaiah. So we come back to Isaiah again, unless we get lost in the Pentateuch there and never get out. Anyway, Isaiah... You might notice even the first verse of Isaiah 43 does that. Created you, he that formed you. In fact, the term, the eternal that created you, is another one of the titles of God. It's really all one word. Yahweh Boreka, the eternal creator, the eternal your creator. So it's one of the other many titles for God as you go through there. Okay, coming on back to where we were then, verse 7. Everyone that's called by my name, for I've created him for my glory, I have formed him, yea, I have made him. So those same three Hebrew words. Now, before we get on to the next paragraph, there's an interesting point back up in verse 4. Since you were precious in my sight, you've been honorable, and I have loved you, therefore I will give, and interestingly enough, the Hebrew word says, a man, not men. So here, again, a possible reference to the Christ, because it doesn't say, I'll give men, as it did in the previous chapter. I'll give the Egyptians and Ethiopians and people of Seba for a ransom. So it's almost the sense this verse is referring back to the same thing, except referring to the Christ, the Messiah, as the atonement for the people. Because here in the Hebrew says, I'll give a man for you. And people for your life. And there again, the word life is the word soul, nephesh. I'll give a man for you and for your soul. And now coming on down to the next paragraph in verse 8. Bring forth the blind people that have eyes and the deaf that have ears. So now he's going back again to Israel and their blindness and then their healing. And so now all of a sudden, Israel that had been blinded, that had been deaf, and now all of a sudden they're not blinded and deaf anymore. But notice the parallel in Jeremiah chapter 5 and verse 21. Well, you might begin verse 20 to show the people it's talking about. Declare this in the house of Jacob and publish it in Judah. It's obvious it's kind of the subject. House of Jacob, big circle around that, and publish it in Judah, another circle around Judah. So you've got your topic pencil marking the subject matter, house of Jacob and Judah. Now notice what he says about them, verse 21. Hear now this, O foolish people, and without understanding, which have eyes and see not, which have ears and hear not. So there again, the house of Jacob and Judah are foolish people, without understanding, that have eyes that don't see and ears that don't hear. Notice Ezekiel 12 and verse 2. We'll just notice a few of the other books and not exhaust the subject, but Ezekiel 12, the word of the Eternal also came unto me, saying, Son of man, you dwell in the midst of a rebellious house, which have eyes to see and don't see. They have ears to hear and they don't hear. They are a rebellious house. And of course, Matthew 13 and verse 14, Christ even quotes this as his explanation for why he spoke in parables. In Matthew 13, the disciples came and said, well, why do you speak to them in parables? And he said, well, because it's given to you to understand the mysteries. The people who are called have had it given to them to understand the mysteries. And yet the ministers are the stewards of these mysteries. But again, you can't learn the mysteries without the church and without the ministry. It's given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it's not given. Whoever has, to him shall be given, and he'll have more abundance, but whoever has not, from him will be taken away even what he thinks he has. That's why I speak to them in parables, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand, and in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. You know, Jesus should have said, and in them is fulfilled the prophecy of 2 Isaiah. But you notice he didn't say that. There are only two Isaiahs. That shows you how scholarly scholars are, you know. Because Isaiah apparently was martyred by being cut in two pieces. Therefore, that showed there must have been two Isaiahs. You know, I learned better than that years ago because I went up to Dr. Hay after a graduate school on prophecy class, and I said, well, Dr. Hay, that image you pictured up there and the two legs of the Roman Empire, you know, and the toes are the Roman Empire, and I said, what are the five fingers on each hand picture? He said, well, same thing the ears picture. Of course, I thought, well, wait a minute, same thing as the ears. I couldn't figure out anything the ears pictured, and he said, yeah, that's what the ten fingers picture. Didn't picture anything. You know, you can't take an analogy beyond the one that gives the analogy. You know, you have to stop where the one giving the analogy stops. Otherwise, you'd get into all kinds of messes. Well, there weren't two Isaiahs because he was whacked in two and martyred in two pieces. I wonder what happened to Judas where he hanged himself and his entrails burst out, you know, on the, I wonder how that was symbolical of something about Judas. Well, anyway, he says, in these people in Jesus' day was fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah that said, by hearing you'll hear and not understand, and seeing you'll see and not perceive, because the people's hearts wax gross and their ears are dull of hearing, their own eyes they've closed. They might have been allowed to open their eyes if they'd not been wanting them closed. Now, you might notice in Acts 28, it seemed rather striking to me that one of the later booklets that we just had canceled out in the last few years was the one on predestination. And I wondered what was coming next, you know. If the men were going to eliminate that booklet on predestination, I kind of wondered what they were up to, what they did believe and didn't believe, and what was wrong with predestination. You know, I got all that orange marked all the way through my Bible. I'd have to erase all that or tear all that out or something, and I wouldn't have done it. Notice Acts 28.